Welcome to Words with Jam's Christmas podcast, Santa Never Came by Lisa Perrott. On Christmas Day 1974, a tropical cyclone destroyed the city of Darwin and killed 71 people. But for 12-year-old Wendy, the storm was to have quite different consequences.
Santa never made it. December 21st, 1974. Yeah, right, here we go again. Another Christmas with stupid presents, gross decorations and boring barbecues with the boring neighbours. Not to mention the Santa Claus fast for my idiot brother. What you doing, Wendy? Jamie said. Get lost, pest. My brother poked out his ghastly tongue and I turned away, back to my Christmas presents list. Red bike, trampoline, cassette player, roller skates, ABBA's Waterloo album. I paused for a minute, gnawing the end of my pen and thinking what else I could want. What you doing, Wendy? Jamie asked again. I just go away and play with your stupid toys, why don't you? Jamie slouched off. His slitty black eyes did look sad, though you can hardly tell with those Asians. Can't tell what's going on behind their slopey faces. I just didn't get it. If Mum and Dad were so set on adopting a kid, why couldn't they have got a regular Aussie one instead of this yellow kid from Vietnam or wherever he comes from? I mean, he didn't look or act a bit like the rest of us. I shook my head and went back to my presents list. From the corner of the living room, the plastic Christmas tree glittered with Mum's kitsch decorations. Gold tinsel sparkling like fake jewellery, the tiny lights winking as if mocking me. Mum came in and started spraying artificial snow on the branches. As if we ever get snow in Darwin, Mum. Don't be silly, Wendy, she said. It's just so we're in the spirit of Christmas. Dad came in from work and kissed Mum. Tree looks great, Barb, he said. Then I saw his brow crease. There's another cyclone up north. They're calling it Tracy. Yes, dear. Mum was obviously much more worried about finishing her ridiculous Christmas decorations than some cyclone warning. Oh, quit worrying, Bert, she said. It'll probably just change direction like all the others. Come on, Wendy, give us a hand, love. Why is it always me who has to help? Why can't you get Jamie to help? Mum and Dad looked at each other and sighed. They were doing a lot of sighing lately. Let them. After all, it was their fault. I sure didn't want the kid brother. I'd been fine on my own. Dad shook his head and switched on the radio. Tracy's now west of Bathurst Island, the radio man announced. But it was hot, sunny and still outside, like it always was for Christmas. No sign of this stupid cyclone. December 23rd. Last-minute shoppers buzzed about the shopping centre like flies around a Barbie, their sweat turning to BO and making me feel like throwing up. I was glad when Mum finished her shopping and we got the hell out of there. You'll have to get ready for the barbecue as soon as we get home, Wendy, she said, packing Jamie and the shopping into the Holden. I scowled and slid into the front seat, which was so hot it burned my bum. Mum put the shopping away and dressed my brother in clean clothes. Yeah, of course, Jamie had to come. That kid had to come everywhere with us. We all traipsed next door to the Draymores. Smoke spiralled up from the barbecue, over the tin roof of the house, and the fat from the sizzling sausages seemed to hang right off that tropical heat. Flies settled on the coleslaw, and the crickets whirred their usual irritating song. Jamie was soon up to his usual tricks, running around like a crazed person, knocking drinks over and creating havoc. Mum just sat there laughing and grinning and saying to the other mothers, "Oh, isn't he sweet?" The other mothers nodded their heads and smiled at Jamie, and it seemed everyone was happy and excited about Christmas. Everyone except me. I took my cup of orange cordial and went and sat beside the frangipanis. I scowled at Jamie playing hide-and-seek with the other little kids over by the casuarina trees. "What do you make of Tracy?" Dad said to Mr. Draymore. "Ah, probably be the same as Selma," Mr. Draymore said, handing Dad another Foster's. She'll hang about, blow for a bit, then disappear. Dad nodded and sucked on his can of beer. Mr. Draymore turned the sausages over. December 24th. Despite the radio man's ongoing cyclone warnings, it was still hot and sunny, with not a breeze in sight. Mum hauled the turkey out of the freezer. Jamie played with his plastic dinosaurs in the garden. And I thought about all the presents I'd ordered. I can't pinpoint exactly when the wind began its journey of terror, but I do remember Mum switching on the telly when Dad left for his afternoon shift at the timber yard. Tracy has rounded Cape Forcry, Bathurst Island's western tip, and is moving along an east-southeasterly course towards Darwin, the newsreader said. Mum frowned and squeezed my shoulder, but said nothing. It was late afternoon when Mum called Jamie to come inside. The sun had disappeared and iron-coloured clouds hovered over Darwin. The rain started soon after, squalls forming instant ponds in the yard, the water reflecting angry swirls of trees and leaves. Birds shrieked and nosedived like mini aeroplanes bombing the backyard. Jamie's swing swayed as if some kid's ghost was sitting on it. I stood at the living room window watching Mum struggle to get the cover over the pool. Her dress clung to her legs and her hair whipped about her pinched face. I didn't go out and help her. You'd have to be mad to have gone out in that rain. It was early evening when the sirens began to sound, and it seemed that Cyclone Tracy was coming for Christmas, and we couldn't do much but sit and wait for it to hit us. "Bed, Jamie," Mum said. "Must be asleep for Santa." "Not fair. Why doesn't Wendy have to go to bed too?" Jamie said. "Because I'm not a little kid like you." Mum tucked Jamie into bed and kissed him goodnight. 10 p.m. The wind shrieked, sheets of rain stabbing at the windows like 1,000 needles. When Dad's car pulled into the drive, Mum hurried to open the door. Leaves and twigs scuttled in after Dad as he breathed out slowly and ran a trembling hand through his sodden hair. "It's a bad one, Barb. Could hardly keep the car on the road." "We'll change out of those wet clothes, Bert. I'll put the kettle on." Mum and Dad drank their cuppers while Jamie slept on, with no idea that Tracy's evil eye was fixed on Darwin. December 25th, 1:30 a.m. I couldn't get to sleep, what with the screaming wind and the veins of lightning flashing in the dark sky. Mum and Dad said I could come down to the living room with them. We'd been sitting on the sofa for about 10 minutes when it happened. The Christmas lights stopped winking. The radio and the telly went off. Darkness. Total blackout. "Dad?" I couldn't keep my voice from shaking as we listened to the trees moaning, the wood cracking and splintering, and to the teeming rain. 4:30 a.m. "Watch out! The tamarind's gonna go, Barb!" Dad yelled. With the roar of a burst dam, the great tree crashed through the window. Glass exploded like fireworks, and Dad was shouting at us, "Get out, run, get out, come on!" Dad, Mum and I dashed into the kitchen as timber and metal groaned and split, and the whole ceiling caved in. "Oh God, we could have been killed," Mum said, clinging to Dad. All I could think about was my stuff in my bedroom, all wrecked. Then Mum started screaming and shaking Dad. "Jamie! What about Jamie, Bert?" But Mum couldn't go up to Jamie. We were trapped in the kitchen, prisoners of the darkness and the caved-in roof. "He'll be okay, Barb. Don't panic. We'll find Jamie. It'll be light soon." Mum started praying. Dad hugged us and I felt his breath hot and fast on my cheek. Christmas morning, 1974. The silence seemed strange, eerie even, after the din of the night. The early light peeked through the greyness, and I saw that most of our house was a twisted, shredded mass. Dad and Mum cleared a path and started heaving rubble from where Jamie's room had been. "Jamie!" they called. "Jamie! Jamie!" No answer. The Draymores and other neighbours came running over to help. I felt sick. All the horrible things I'd said about Jamie. "Find him, Dad. You've got to find him quick." My heart raced. Please let him be all right. I prayed silently, even though I'd never prayed in all my 12 years. I couldn't stand the tension, the waiting, and walked away from the house. That's when the shock really hit. Rubbish and debris blanketed the streets. The houses no more than wooden stilts swaying on floorboards. No trees, no flowers, nothing green, only brown, mud and wreckage everywhere. Dazed people wandered through the mess, trying to salvage things. Some were bleeding, others cried and stumbled and threw their hands up in despair. Wind, 200 kilometres. Gone, everything gone. Hundreds dead. An old man bent over in what had been his kitchen. From the rubble he picked out a spoon, a bottle opener and a cracked plate. He threw the plate back and put the other things into his pocket. I shuffled back to our wreck, certain they would have found Jamie by then, dead. Mum was bent over a small figure. They'd found him. My brother lay still, his legs twisted at bizarre angles. My heart thumped so hard I thought it might explode. Then I saw Jamie's chest move up and down. I raced to his side, knelt down, pushed back his shiny black hair and kissed his bruised forehead. You'll be okay, Jamie. Don't worry, we'll get you fixed up. Jamie opened his lovely dark eyes, just a little, and across the ruin and carnage that was now Darwin, he smiled at me. And that was the best Christmas present I ever got.